Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro. Thank you for joining us.
Coming up, the International Criminal Court judges authorize an investigation into allegations of state-sponsored crimes in Burundi, including murder.
I'm feeling very happy because it will reveal the truth about the situation in Burundi and probably that people who are responsible for the crimes will be punished and to be a good example for others.
Power struggles in Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, threaten to throw the country into political uncertainty. We hear from an analyst.
It is not yet settled, even when we know that the First Lady is going to replace Mnangagwa as the Vice President.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you.
But here's what's happening around the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Judges at the International Criminal Court have approved the opening of a full investigation into alleged crimes against humanity in Burundi. The ICC decision was reportedly taken last month already, just 2 days before Burundi, on October 27th, became the first nation to quit the tribunal. The ruling was then kept under seal for 2 weeks. At least 1,200 people have died in Burundi in political unrest since 2015. A judge in Zimbabwe has ordered a U.S. citizen charged with subversion and accused of insulting President Robert Mugabe to be freed on bail. Martha O'Donovan will, however, have to hand over her passport to Zimbabwean authorities and report to the police twice a week as part of her bail conditions. O'Donovan, who has been working for the local social media outlet Magamba TV, denies the accusations against her, including a claim that she called Mugabe a sick man on Twitter. The 25-year-old faces up to 20 years in prison if she is convicted on the subversion charge. Amnesty International, meanwhile, commented that the charges against Martha O'Donovan don't stand up to scrutiny and must be dropped. She will return to court on November 15th. The UN has announced that Saudi Arabia's blockade of Yemen could lead to the largest famine the world has seen for many decades, possibly costing millions of victims. The Saudi-led coalition claims that the blockade is intended to stop illegal arms deliveries to Yemen's Houthi rebels, whom the Saudis have been fighting since 2015. George Khoury, the head of UN Humanitarian Affairs in Yemen, says that supply lines have to remain open for the welfare of the Yemeni people.
We are concerned about the decision by the coalition to close all seaports, airports, because this may have negative implications on the already dire humanitarian situation in the country. You know that Yemen is the largest food insecurity crisis all over the world. These are people who depend completely on relief aid. So if we'll be unable to bring food into the country, that will have grave implications on the well-being of these people.
Meanwhile, the UN Security Council met behind closed doors to discuss the most recent escalation in the Yemen conflict after Saudi Arabia closed off all land, sea, and air borders to the country, including UN humanitarian flights. You're listening to DW News. Saudi Arabia has reportedly called in more than 200 people for questioning in regards to corruption and embezzlement allegations to the tune of $100 billion. Saudi Attorney General Saud al-Mujeb said in a statement on Thursday that 7 people had meanwhile been released without charge, leaving 201 people still detained. Critics say this purge amounts to a power grab by the Saudi Crown Prince to sideline potential rivals and critics. Germany has been marking the 28th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. On November 9th, 1989, a lifting of travel restrictions by the communist regime of the former German Democrat Republic, or GDR, resulted in thousands of East Berliners crossing over to the West without hindrance, following 28 years of partition. The events led to the country's reunification 11 months later. The day, however, also marks the so-called Kristallnacht of 1938, when Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime destroyed hundreds of synagogues and other Jewish property throughout the country in a precursor to the Holocaust. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro.
International Criminal Court judges have authorized an investigation into allegations of crimes, including murder, rape and torture in Burundi. The decision comes shortly after the East African nation formally quit the court.
And judges who studied evidence provided by the prosecutors say it offers a reasonable basis to proceed with an investigation into crimes committed since April 26, 2015, allegedly by state agents and other groups implementing state policies. DW's Apollinaire Niyirora in Bujumbura has been gauging people's reactions after the decision.
I'm disappointed with this decision. Many of us protested the ICC. This court serves the interests of the Western countries. I'm deeply disappointed because the ICC did not take into account our disapproval. I'm not supporting impunity, but I don't want the court to get involved into our matters. I have trust in our officials and national courts to deal with crimes committed in Burundi.
As a Burundi national who has witnessed the crimes committed in this country, I welcome the ICC decision to open full investigations. Many people were killed, many were illegally detained, and thousands have fled the country. The perpetrators are still around. Criminals should be punished, and justice should be served for innocent people.
I'm feeling very happy because it will reveal the truth about the situation in Burundi and probably that people who are responsible for the crimes will be punished and to be a good example for others, and the human rights will continue to be respected. I'm sure they are going to succeed to the investigation as probably they did in the other countries.
Those were reactions from Burundians after the ICC ordered an investigation into crimes committed there. And Eunice, we have some comments, you know, coming in. But first, let's listen to this one.
That's a nice move. ICC should investigate Burundi very well. This should keep most of the African leaders on their toes, not to mismanage their economy and maltreat their people. Thank you, Alfred from Ghana.
Well, thank you very much, Alfred, for your comment. Remember, you can always send us your comments on Facebook and also via WhatsApp. Okigen Aondohemba also sent us his comment. He's saying the decision of the court is a welcome decision. African states should learn how to respect their citizens.
Well, we have some comments also from, you know, West Africa, Nigeria. And as usual, it's about Biafra. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, they say, Frank Chinagrom says, please come to Nigeria and investigate the killings of unarmed Biafrans. That's a message to the ICC investigators.
Yeah, another one from Nigeria. He's called Izuchuku. He's saying the ICC should also investigate the murder of 100 women from Nigeria in a Spanish warship.
Anyway, Jen from South Africa says investigation, knowing the truth, is always good for everybody not involved with criminal activity. Many thanks for those comments. Please continue visiting our page, DW Africa. Leave your comments there and we'll definitely or always read them whenever we can.
Now, today is a unique day in Germany, marking a number of important anniversaries in the country's history. It was on November 9, 1989, that the Berlin Wall fell, eventually leading to the reunification of East and West Germany.
Well, and nearly a century ago, after being defeated in World War I, political leaders declared the country a republic. That was on this day in 1918. The years that followed were scarred by economic hardship and street battles between the far left and far right.
And then Hitler came to power and democracy was abolished. On November 9th, 1938, the Nazi regime conducted a massive program against Germany's Jewish population. As synagogues and businesses were attacked, police stood by and did nothing. Doris Kronisch has more on what happened on that day.
On the evening of November 9th, 1938, synagogues in Europe were set aflame. They burned in Germany, Austria, and in Czechoslovakia. Organized gangs of Nazi and brown shirt thugs abused, imprisoned, or murdered thousands of Jews. Amid the cheers of countless gawkers, 7,000 Jewish-owned shops were destroyed. The mob then looted the shops. That night was the start of the biggest genocide in human history.
Doris Cronich.
And to Zimbabwe now, where power struggles within the ruling party ZANU-PF threaten to throw the country into political uncertainty. The recent sacking and eventual exile of Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa has raised political tensions in Zimbabwe, with the First Lady Grace Mugabe rumored to be the next vice president.
Mnangagwa's relationship with Mugabe's wife, Grace Mugabe, had become increasingly strained as their two factions within ZANU-PF fight for dominance. Mnangagwa's removal came 2 days after Grace publicly claimed him a coup plotter. Before we came on air, Isaac Mugabe, my colleague here, spoke to Eldred Musunungure, a political analyst, and he started by asking him whether the political wrangles will end anytime soon.
The power struggles will continue until there is finality, in respect of the succession question. It is not yet settled, even when we know that the first lady is going to replace ED Mnangagwa as the vice president. But that doesn't settle with any finality. The ultimate successor to the incumbent.
What kind of support does First Lady Grace Mugabe have within Zimbabwe, especially in key institutions like the army and the influential war veterans movement, for her to succeed her husband?
Well, the War Veteran Association is fragmented, though the main formation of that association was associated with the former VP Mnangagwa, but there is a splinter group of that association which has been routing for the First Lady. So the First Lady can account on that small constituent of war veterans. Perhaps it will get larger as it attracts more members from those that may feel that they are being left in the cold as a result of the expulsion of VP Mnangagwa. In the army, I think it's an emerging constituency. As of now, I think the top apex, the top ranks of the security sector was allegedly aligned to the former VP. So the First Lady would need to cultivate that constituency and then consolidate her presence in that constituency. I think it would be a work in progress, going forward.
I was speaking to Edward Masunungure, a political analyst in Harare, telling me about the political tensions in the country ahead of the ZANU-PF Congress.
Now, Isaac, there have been comments which are coming in also on this topic. There's someone called Kwasi Ochere Gaba from Ghana. He's saying, why are Africans so greedy when they come to power? Does Mugabe want to run Zimbabwe with his family? After all these years of no practicable solutions to the plight of Zimbabweans, oh, Africa.
Yeah, indeed, it's a similar comment like the many we've been having in recent days. Samuel from Cameroon says, even if she's selected, what I know is that she's digging her own grave. That is in reference to Grace Mugabe.
Yes, and we have Caleb Chauro from Nairobi, Kenya. He's saying First Lady of Zimbabwe, Grace, will have it all. The writing is on the wall. Even the presidency is preserved for her, only waiting to rubber stamp and approve her tenure. Well, we'll see about that.
And of course, keep your comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we'll always read them whenever we can.
Percy from Cameroon says Mugabe has been president all his life. Now he is passing over presidency to his wife, Kingdom of Zimbabwe. Other people should be allowed to rule all Africa. I think people are also a bit disappointed and they want to see someone else or someone apart from the Mugabe family coming into power.
Yeah, and Emmerson Mnangagwa promised also to do whatever he can to come back to Zimbabwe and be the leader. That's on our Facebook page, what people have been saying anyway. Our correspondents in Harare are monitoring, the story, and they always keep us updated.
Oh, yes, they will. Thank you. Keep it Africa Link. In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn, Germany. I'm Eunice Njuru.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and we're live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a court in Zimbabwe has released an American citizen who had been detained for insulting President Robert Mugabe.
First and foremost, we're happy that she's got bail. But I think it's an attempt not just to silence Martha, not just to silence us as Makamba Network and the work that we do. It's also an attempt to crack down on any expression on social media.
To wear a wig or not, that is the question, Eunice.
Yes, indeed, Isaac. And in Ghana, the Chief Justice has issued a threat to deal with lawyers and judges who don't wear wigs in court. And they would not be allowed into the courtroom unless they wear their wigs. The practice was copied by Ghana's judicial system from the British, who have stopped the practice. Lawyers in Ghana and ordinary Ghanaians wonder why the country is still sticking with this practice instead of having better reforms. Isaac Alleji in Accra brings us more.
4 months after taking over as Chief Justice, Sophia Ekufu appears to be enforcing laws she considers essential to protecting the integrity of the legal profession. In a notice issued from her office, she warned that judges and lawyers would have to put on their wigs to be allowed into the courtroom to conduct their professional duties from this month. She said that adhering to this directive would protect judges and lawyers and restore discipline within the judiciary. Ekufu is very passionate about standards in the legal profession.
I'm passionate about integrity, the delivery of quality justice. The judiciary is indeed defender of the rule of law. A nation breaks down and descends into anarchy if its judicial system breaks down, and I will pursue measures to protect the integrity of the institution.
Wilberforce Asari is a human rights activist, a legal correspondent, and analyst for a private media outlet in Ghana. He gives us an overview of the reaction of lawyers to this new directive during court sessions.
Even though the directive has been issued and there has been mixed reactions from lawyers from all the divides in our country, most of the lawyers have decided to comply with the orders of the Chief Justice to wear the wig when they are in the courtroom. But some of them have told me that they don't need to wear the wig when they are not in the courtroom. When they enter the courtroom, they will wear it to please the Chief Justice.
To be considered well-dressed as a judge or lawyer in Ghana, one needs to put on his or her gown, bibs, and add the hair wig. David De Ewuku recently completed his law studies in Accra. He appears to appreciate the reasoning behind the Chief Justice's directive, but considers it unnecessary to enforce the wearing of wigs in particular.
I don't mind the gowns and the bibs, but is the wig really necessary? I know it signifies some status, okay, that you are not an ordinary person, you're a lawyer, but is it really necessary to the extent that you not be allowed to enter the court or allowed to practice if you didn't bring your wig? Those are the questions that pass through my mind.
Communication consultant and social analyst Esther Ama is appalled by this directive, describing it as archaic and regressive.
We are in the 21st century. Wigs are a leftover colonial legacy. Why, in the heat of the tropical sun, in a nation in Africa, would we talk about covering our natural hair with wigs that are throwbacks to an era that we have left behind? It is nonsensical. It is unacceptable.
Lawyers and judges have complied with the Chief Justice's directive because they fear the repercussions of disobeying it. Although many of them are unwilling to speak on record to the media, it appears there is little they can do for now. Maybe this law would change in the future when the judiciary is led by a modern reformist who is willing to let go of old customs. For now, I am afraid the wigs will continue to reign.
Isaac Alleji there reporting from Accra, Ghana. Now, we asked our users or our listeners, do you think lawyers and judges in former British colonies in Africa should continue to wear the wig? Well, this is a debate that we brought about on WhatsApp and on our Facebook page.
Let's listen in.
Yeah, I think they should wear their wigs because lawyers and judges are a noble profession and we don't expect them to be dressed in anyhow.
My name is Osvaldo. I am from Mozambique. At least in Mozambique, $400 and $4,000 is so expensive. It's too much money. And I don't think they have to wear it because it's just a wig.
Mm-hmm. And Kumalo says, no, impossible. Africa has long gone through this colonial protraction and it's time to get rid of all this.
Well, it seems like they're not agreeing on whether to wear or not.
Exactly.
Amo Charles is saying, I see nothing wrong if they are made to wear. The wigs identify them and make them unique in their work. Growing up in Ghana, judges have been wearing wigs and identify with them.
Well, we have so many of these comments, but we'll have to leave it at that for now and we'll come back to them later whenever we can. But first,
Uzone.
And for Uzone this week, we are talking about sex. In Senegal, sex remains a largely taboo subject, but it's now possible to get accurate medical advice anonymously and without judgment over the phone.
Yes, Isaac, callers can get informed answers to questions about contraception, sexuality, pregnancy, or sexual transmitted diseases from experienced midwives who man the phones at newly opened specialized call center. Young people make up the majority of users and they can contact the center also by messaging via WhatsApp or even Skype calls. Emmanuel Lande reports from Dakar.
Having the sex talk with your parents can be pretty awkward. For Senegalese teenagers and young adults, it can even be taboo to bring up the subject with conservative elders. Preserving family reputation, honour, or just out of simple good manners, rare are those that can sit down and talk about tampons and condoms with their mum and dad. Fama Fall is 20 years old. She's studying logistics in Dakar. Social media like Twitter and her friends are her main sources of information on sexuality.
Internet. Ou des copines.
Internet and my friends. I have friends my age that are already married, so we can talk about. But most of the things I've learned was at school with my friends or my teachers. We are taught about different methods of contraception, things about pregnancy, things about men and about women, just about sex, really.
In Senegal, one girl in three are wed before they reach 18, and only 7% of married teen girls use birth control, according to the latest National Health Survey. Fama lives with her grandmother, so the generation gap to talk about sex and contraception at home is even wider.
C'est un peu un sujet tabou, en fait.
It's a bit of a taboo subject. In Senegal, some families are not used to talking about that. And like, mostly you talk about it when you're about to get married or when there's a problem in the family. Yeah, like a pregnancy.
Western Central Africa have one of the world's lowest rates of contraceptive use among women and teenage girls. They often lack knowledge about their options, struggle to access health centres and face objections from their husbands and families. There is another contraceptive method used by parents, though. Tell the girls they'll get pregnant if they touch or kiss a boy. It's one of the great pregnancy myths girls are told when they get their first period. In Senegal, about one in four married women and girls aged 15 to 49 use modern contraception, up from 12% in 2011. But the Senegalese government wants to lift that figure to 45% by 2020 and increase the number of youth who use sexual and reproductive health services to 70% from 10%.
Allô Lydia, bonjour. Santé alhamdulillah, c'est bien. Fait du centre d'appel Lydia.
Meissa Dia is a trained midwife. She's one of eight midwives recruited by the NGO DKT International to answer questions from the public about family planning, sex or STDs through a call centre which has been called Allo Lydia.
Les gens ignorent les différentes méthodes contraceptives qui existent.
People are unaware of the different contraceptive methods or where to get these contraceptives, the costs, the side effects, the benefits of the inconvenience. These are the questions that come up all the time.
She firmly believes that there's a lack of education that needs to be addressed.
Il faut que les enfants comprennent la réalité. C'est la communication. S'ils comprennent, ils vont adopter la situation.
Children need to understand reality through communication. If they understand, they will adopt the situation. But if they don't understand, it creates endless questions. We're trying to change things now, since we've had the chance to know the truth. We'll try to teach our future daughters, our nieces, our little sisters, or at least to improve the cultural situation in our country.
The thirst for education is there. It's just that relying on questionable websites and hearsay can be problematic. That's where the Allo Lydia hotline comes in. The authorities are hoping it will become the go-to place for young and old to get accurate information.
Emmanuel Lande in Dakar with that report on sex.
Yes, we have Caleb Chauro here from Nairobi, Kenya, who is saying, I only have one question. Why taboo on what is holy and God-given? It's a high time we Africans think outside the box and guide our society well. And John from the UK is also saying, at least it's some improvement. You must always start from somewhere and move forward from there. Well done, Senegal.
Many thanks for those comments. Keep them flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Speaking out.
A court in Zimbabwe has released an American citizen, Martha O'Donovan, who had been detained for allegedly referring to President Robert Mugabe as a goblin on Twitter. It was the first arrest since the launch of a ministry to control social media. O'Donovan tweeted that we are being led by a selfish and sick man. O'Donovan is a part of the Magamba Crew, an organization that uses creative forms of youth activism aimed towards creating a democratic and just Zimbabwe. Our correspondent in Harare, Privilege Mushaniri, was at the court. He spoke to Isaac Mugabe and was telling him what the bail conditions set for Martha O'Donovan.
The state gave its arguments that Donovan was not a good candidate for bail, saying that she could skip bail if released because of citizenship. Then the defense successfully argued against all what the state had brought up, and the judge ordered her to be released on bail, on a $1,000 bail, and also to report twice at the police Criminal Investigation Department, Law and Order Department, and also to surrender her passport as well as not to interfere with state witnesses.
And how did the Magamba Crew receive her release?
The Magamba group was quite elated and they welcomed the decision. And I spoke to the director of Magamba and he says that the attack is not only on Martha, but against all organizations that are working within the civic society. I spoke to the director, Sam Monroe.
We know that Martha is completely innocent, that these allegations are baseless. We look forward to our day in court. First and foremost, we're happy that she's got bail. But I think it's an attempt not just to silence Martha, not just to silence us as Magamba Network and the work that we do. It's also an attempt to crack down on any expression on social media. It's an attempt to instill fear in everyone who uses Twitter and Facebook to express themselves. And I think the state is doing this also ahead of elections. 2018 is around the corner.
We will continue monitoring this story as it unfolds. Now, Eunice, back to the wigs. To wear or not to wear? That is the question. Michael Adu says between $400,000 and $4,000, this is nothing but a waste of time and resources, not even mentioning the heat. Mm-hmm.
And Junior Aye Samuel Adonai says only if it is important and serves the purpose of its intent. If it is for security of the judges, it is doing that.
And Matthias Goncalves says, no, we live in Africa, we adapt African cultures and reality.
Ndidi is saying, I respect the position of the lawyers. It's time to let go of colonialization once and for all.
And there is an interesting, you know, comment on Facebook. Peter Motse says, what's with the wig? I don't know even why even Europeans used to wear them. That's so not correct.
Yeah, and Matthias Goncalves, he's saying, no, we live in Africa. We adapt African cultures and realities.
Uche says, from Port Harcourt, Nigeria, says, the wig is a uniform. Let them produce theirs locally. And Kwabena Ngana says, where the Judicial Council could come up with own symbolic material to replace whatever that wig represents. Interesting comments there.
Yes, and Tuyishime here, he's starting by laughing and saying, haha, the question is, where are they made of? If it's in Ghana, it's okay because it contributes to Ghana's industry development. But if they're imported from Britain, Chief Justice should resign to be tried for forcing people into colonialism after 52 years of independence. That is what he is saying.
Yeah, many comments are calling for his resignation. Anyway, many thanks for those comments.
And yeah, keep them coming. Do visit our Facebook page. And thank you for listening to Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe.
Bye for now.